Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as you would say in Italy, and welcome to those who don't speak Italian. This is the second episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast and the 199th episode, period, of this podcast. We really, really appreciate all of your continued support. Of course, no, I am not David Amoyal. He is still away. He will be back next week, thankfully. I'm Alex Goldberg, and once again, I am joined by the awesome Claudio Perfetto, who is with me on Monday for that episode. Did a fantastic job. And as I said at the end of that episode, it really is important to David and I, no matter who is in the chair or not, to still give you, our loyal listeners, two episodes a week of the Calcioland podcast. So that's exactly what we are doing. And we are going to give you a pretty normal episode, like I said on Monday's episode. On Mondays, it's really important for us to do winners and losers and Twitter questions. And on Thursdays or Fridays, it's really important for us to do game picks with Thousand Names and David and Twitter questions once again. So that's exactly what you're going to get. But like usual, we are going to talk about something here at the top. And no, this is not a repeat episode. This is just an ongoing drama and really quite an entertaining story. Mauro Icardi is once again in the news. He just had released a statement the other day. So David and I have talked about Icardi a lot now on this podcast, but we really haven't had the chance to hear what Claudio thinks of this whole drama, this whole saga. So Claudio, quite simply, I'm going to read you some of the quotes from Icardi's latest statement, and I just want your take on the quotes and the situation overall. So here are some of the quotes from Icardi. "It's in the hardest moments that real love is shown. In those moments, I've always chosen to stay at and with Inter. For the love of these colors, I've rejected offers that few professional football players would reject. I know what love for Inter is, and the Interisti know that because they've seen how much I've suffered, cried, fought, and in the end celebrated for these colors. In a family, many things can happen, both nice and sad. There must always be respect. These are my values. These are the values that I've always fought for in my story at Inter, with Inter." So, Claudio, as you can tell, these are kind of cryptic, but maybe actually they're more insightful than I may give them credit for. What is your take on these quotes specifically, the overall statement, and just the Icardi situation?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me again. I'm looking forward to doing a second podcast with you, Alex. We had a great time the first time around. As far as Icardi, you're right. It's the story that keeps on giving. Just won't go away. Every day there's a new statement, a new quote. His wife's going on TV in Italy. His wife, who's also his agent, as you all know from listening to Calcioland. So it's just crazy twists and turns. And you do enjoy it when it's not the club you're supporting. When it's the club that you're supporting and this is happening and you have a great player like him not playing because of all the drama, it's a little bit different, I'm sure. You know, we could ask Inter fans about that. As far as these quotes that just came out from Icardi in a statement yesterday, they're very interesting. I think the point that they're trying to get at, and I say they are because I believe it's really Icardi and his wife slash agent Wanda, that through these years, they've had numerous opportunities to leave Inter, maybe for bigger clubs in Europe, for more money, and they haven't done it because of their love for the club and the team. And now they just feel like everybody at the club and maybe even the fan base is attacking them. Meanwhile, they've shown loyalty through the years when Inter was really in a dark moment and wasn't playing in Champions League football, wasn't competing for anything important. They weren't even really making the Europa League over the past few years. So my take is that they're just trying to get their message out that they've had opportunities to leave. They've been very loyal to the club and they might feel disrespected at this point by the club and its fans because maybe people don't know the ins and outs of what has gone on in the Icardi Inter relationship through the years. And that's pretty much what I'm getting from this. And I don't know who wrote it, whether it was Icardi himself or his wife. But nevertheless, it's coming from both of them, from that party. So it's a very interesting situation.
Yeah, so Claudio, you bring up Juan de Nara. And first off, I do have to say, David, anytime we've talked about the Icardi situation, in my opinion, he's been spot on, saying, yes, he knows that Wanda is a colorful character and that Icardi's agent situation is not your normal situation. But because of the fact that Wanda is an interesting character, Wanda is Icardi's wife and a woman, that the perception from everybody talking about the issue, whether it's media or fans or what have you, the perception of Wanda is a little bit skewed because of those reasons that I just said, her being a woman, her being Icardi's wife, so on and so forth. So that is all totally, totally true, what David says. But I have to ask you, and maybe it's an obvious answer, do you think Icardi and Inter would be in this situation if his agent wasn't also his wife?
It's a great question. And, you know, I'd have to say no. And the reason why is because if you look at Icardi, he's, you know, he wrote the book, which, you know, there was some stuff about the Inter ultras in there that they didn't like, and he had issues with the ultras. But other than that, really, as a player, he's been pretty quiet. You know, he goes to training, he goes to games, he plays hard. You know, he really doesn't say anything too crazy or outspoken. You know, he's been a good soldier of the club for a few years now. And if you take Wanda and her role, you know, she's very big on social media. She, you know, she's trying to make her name, a name for herself outside of just being his wife. Obviously she's his agent as well, but she wants to be a TV personality. At least that's what the perception is from the outside, because she goes on all of these shows. She, you know, she has big social media following. She's constantly posting things on social media. And I think that plays into it. If he had a different agent, I know, you know, off the air, you even mentioned someone like Mino Raiola, who has his own issues with players. But if you look at an agent like that, he's constantly trying to get the most money for his players, you know, his clients. He's not making all this crazy drama around the club. He's not really trying to make a name for himself. He's really just trying to get the top dollar for his players. I even think of the Donnarumma situation with Milan a few years ago and Raiola. You know, that was really, he always said that he did not feel that the club, Milan's ownership at that time, was for real and credible. And you know what? It turned out to be right, you know, because they defaulted and they had to give up ownership at the time. You know, we're talking of Yong Hung Lee here. So someone like that, as loud and obnoxious as they may seem, their goal is really to get their players to the best clubs and get the most dollar for their players. Whereas when your wife is your agent, you take the criticism a little bit more personally. It hurts you. I guess, you know, there's more emotion into it, you know, and that's probably what they're feeling here, is the embarrassment of getting the captain's armband stripped from you. It's not just affecting the player, and you don't have an agent here who's a voice of reason saying, look, you know, as embarrassing as it may be, it just keep playing, do the right thing, make your money. In the summer, when this is all blown over, you know, your value will still be high and we can make a move to another club if that's what you want, or we could work things out here. You know, when the embarrassment hits home of someone getting the captain's armband stripped from them, it's hitting the player, but it's also hitting his wife, who in this case is also his agent. So I really think that if he had a different agent who wasn't so close personally to him, the situation would play out differently.
Yeah, I totally agree, Claudio. And it's not to say that Icardi himself is not an eccentric character. He's not potentially a toxic professional at times for his team, for his club. However, I just think it's undeniable that if he maybe had an agent who wasn't his wife, this wouldn't have snowballed. This wouldn't have gotten out of hand. This wouldn't have multiplied. And that's not really even me just blaming all of this on Wanda. I just think it's kind of a fact. But I have to ask one more question regarding this Icardi situation. And anybody who listens to this podcast regularly knows I'm a Chelsea fan. And I'm not making this question about Chelsea, but I think they're a perfect example for this question. Icardi, as I said, is obviously an eccentric character. He might not be your model citizen. And when you look at a team like Chelsea, on one hand, they kind of need a striker, especially for the long term. They have Gonzalo Higuain right now, but his future at the club is very uncertain, and he really is on the back nine of his career. And Chelsea right now, though, have also a very unstable, sometimes toxic atmosphere around the club, in the dressing room. There is apparently a player power issue that's been going on for a long, long time. I say apparently, but I know there is. So if you are a team like Chelsea, where you are a top club, and I put that in quotes, but you are a top club, you do have standards and expectations of a top club, but you're also looking for stability, but you're also looking for a striker, would you take a chance on someone like Mauro Icardi? Because on one hand, he's really damn talented, but on the other hand, he could bring even more instability and more drama to the club. Would you take a chance on someone like Icardi? I guess what I'm kind of asking is, do you think Icardi might be toxic in another situation?
Well, you know, it's a great point to bring up Chelsea. I know you're a huge fan of theirs, but Chelsea in particular, as you know better than anybody, they have an issue with player power at the club. So I'm not sure a club like that would want to bring in another player that has similar issues like Icardi does at this time. I could see, you know, a bigger team, not a bigger team, but I mean a more veteran team like a Real Madrid, someone with a bunch of stars already on the team, a strong locker room, strong presence in the locker room. I could see someone like that bringing him in and him being positive for them, especially because, you know, Icardi is a great player. And the issue, I think, in this situation was Inter making him the captain. I know David has said that repeatedly also. You know, Inter making him the captain in the first place seemed to be the biggest issue here, because when they made him the captain, he was the biggest star on the team, there's no doubt. But, you know, what was his leadership like? You know, he was very young. Did he really deserve it? Or, you know, was it maybe a demand that he wanted to stay at the club? You know, who knows the ins and outs of what actually happened? So I think that if he were to leave Inter and he went to another team with a very strong captain in place and a strong group of players in place, strong personalities that really control the locker room, you know, he would be a great signing. But a club that's unstable, that doesn't have that type of leadership, doesn't have that type of dynamic, he probably would be a problem. And, you know, going back to the reason that, you know, his wife and agent, she, you know, she might know what she's doing, but she does make a lot of quotes in the media. And I think, you know, the whole reason why this situation came about was because of her quotes about the other players on the team and stuff. And you bring toxicity to a club that doesn't have stability, it's never really going to work out, you know, despite his talent. So, you know, if I was in charge of a club, I would look at the dynamics of my team and the personalities in the locker room and see if we would be able to bring someone in like him and manage him, you know, more so than making him our big signing and making him a quote unquote leader of the team. I would stay away from something like that.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Claudio. I hate to keep agreeing with everything you're saying, but I think your point about Icardi should go to a team with an already established culture, with veterans who can handle maybe a younger, controversial player is just absolutely bang on. Now, maybe former Chelsea teams with John Terry and Michael Ballack and Frank Lampard could have handled Icardi coming to them, but I don't think this Chelsea team is equipped to at all. So that closes this Icardi conversation for this episode, or really just for this episode, because it really feels like this Icardi story is going absolutely nowhere. But let's move on. Let's move on to game picks with Thousand Names and David. And yes, neither of them are here to give you their game picks personally, but David sent me the game picks from Thousand Names and David. If you don't know by now, Thousand Names picks the games that he is going to predict score lines and captions for. And then David gives his picks as well. And Claudio and I will just give our score line predictions. We're not going to tell you a full background as to why we're picking it, but we will just add our score line predictions right after. So the first game that Thousand Names has chosen to predict is Lazio-Roma. And he has Lazio winning 3-0 with goals scored by Correa, Luis Alberto, and Ciro Immobile. And he says Inzaghi finally wins a derby after getting smacked around for years, and Di Francesco is too focused on FC Porto in the Champions League. And David, for this game, has Lazio-Roma as 1-1 with the goal scorers Edin Dzeko and Milinkovic-Savic. So my prediction for this is actually quite different from what I normally predict with Roma, because I've been kind of down on Roma all year, but I have Roma winning 2-1. Claudio, what do you have?
I actually have the same exact thing, Roma winning 2-1.
Wow. All right. So let's move on to the second game, Thousand Names picked. And he had Napoli-Juve. He has Napoli winning 1-0, which is kind of funny because Juve is the team that's so famous for winning 1-0. And he's got Maksimović scoring the one goal. And his caption here is, of course, Ronaldo misses a penalty. And De Laurentiis in tears celebrates in front of Paratici and even pulls his pants down. You can feel Morata's absence. Wow, Thousand Names always brings it when it's a Juve prediction. And in this match, David has a 0-0 draw between Napoli and Juve. And me personally, I'm going to have the reverse of Thousand Names prediction. I'm going to have Juve going with a classic 1-0 win, their bread and butter. Claudio, what do you got?
I have Juve 2, Napoli 1 as well.
Okay. You have the most exciting prediction of all, although actually Thousand's caption was beyond exciting. All right, let's move on to the next one he's got. Atalanta-Fiorentina, and he's got this in a 2-2 draw. And the goal scorers, according to him, will be Freuler, Mario Pasalic, Vertu, and Giovanni Simeone. And his caption is, better two wounded than one dead. The real match is in the Coppa Italia. Atalanta is struggling. And for David, David has Atalanta winning 1-0 over Fiorentina. Duvan Zapata is his goal scorer. And for me, I have a very exciting scoreline, actually. Please, though, don't bet on it and don't blame me if you do and you lose. I have 4-2 to Atalanta. Claudio, what do you got?
I'm also going to pick another exciting scoreline. Fiorentina 3, Atalanta 2, though, but also don't follow my picks.
Yeah, please. We are not held responsible for any gambling picks that you actually do place. So those were our game picks. I hope you enjoyed them. I know it's a lot more fun when David actually reads them in Italian and kind of just knows Thousand's Names vibe, but I got to say, Thousand Names is just never boring with what he sends to David and to you, the listeners. So, all right, Claudio, this is my favorite time of the show. It is our Twitter questions. And yes, David is not here, but you did such a great job answering the ones you had on Monday that this absolutely must go on. We have a few more this week. So let's jump right into it. The first one is, Claudio, if you were Gattuso, how would you approach Suso? Would you have him come off the bench?
It's a very interesting question. Suso has been such a big part of Milan for the past few years. He's really been one of the only bright spots of the team in the last few years. He's not going through a great run of form at the moment. He's struggling a little bit. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if I would bring him off the bench just because I wouldn't want to kill his confidence. You know, who's going to replace him? Castillejo, maybe, but he hasn't been totally consistent, even though he's been playing better lately. He hasn't been, the token of consistency this season. So, you know, I think the way that Gattuso kind of managed Çalhanoğlu in his recent run of bad form, I think you're going to see a similar approach to Suso here, where maybe he gives him a game off here and there, but he'll be playing for the most part consistently. And, you know, he's just going to have to work through it. And hopefully, you know, he comes out of it, because in years past, when Suso hasn't played well, Milan hasn't done well. You know, thankfully this year for Milan fans, they're a much better team around Suso, and they haven't needed him to play his best to kind of keep up their form and win a few games here since the beginning of the year. So that's a positive sign, but they're at their best when he's at his best. So they're going to have to manage the situation correctly, and hopefully in the stretch run of the season, they get him back to his best and assisting and scoring goals.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think that at the beginning of the season, when it really was nothing like this Milan that we're seeing now, Suso was just an incredible form. Imagine if you had the Suso from the beginning of the season with this current Milan group of Paqueta, Bakayoko, Piontek, Kessié, everybody that's firing on all cylinders, you'd have one really scary team, but it's just those haven't crossed paths. So this perfectly segues into the next question, Claudio. Which winger should Milan target next season?
So in the January window, they tried to sign a few wingers, didn't really work out. Carrasco, obviously from in China right now, they tried to sign him, but the wages were just too high for them to bring in. De La Feu is also always a possibility to return because he had a great 6-month stint with the club a few years ago. But me personally, if I was in charge of Milan, it might cost a lot of money, but I would go after Federico Chiesa of Fiorentina. I just think he's someone who excels in Serie A, which is, you know, the first thing that I would want on my list. The great thing about the Piątek signing was it was someone who did so well in Serie A for the first 6 months of the season. I think having that Serie A background and broken into Serie A is important in order to get immediate results. I love his pace. I think that Milan is missing pace from the winger position. Castillejo, obviously, as I said before, he's a good player and he's very, very quick, but they could use some more consistency with that pace. And I think Chiesa would bring that. He also is able to score goals. And he's just a very exciting young player that kind of fits the mold of the team, because I wouldn't want them to bring in a very experienced, high-paid winger because, you know, the rest of the team is much younger and getting paid much less. So I think someone like Chiesa, who fits the mold and is a younger player who gets paid a little bit less, even though his transfer fee might be a lot of money, makes the most sense. And they have a nice young Italian core at the club, so adding to it would help them and also the Italian national team going forward.
Yeah, I love your reasoning as to why you're choosing Chiesa, based on the fact that he's already succeeded in Serie A, so there's less of a risk factor there. I mean, that's the exact reason why I rated Inter summer so highly, because almost all of their transfers were already players that had succeeded in Serie A. So I love that shout there. Me personally, though, I'll choose someone outside of Serie A. And it's tough picking a winger right now for Milan for next season, because Milan is definitely ascending towards the top again. They're definitely moving in the right direction. And overall, they're obviously a top club, but they can't make the transfers yet that a Barcelona is making, that a Real Madrid's making, a Bayern, Manchester City, etc. They can't go after Ousmane Dembele or an Eden Hazard or a Kylian Mbappe or a Neymar. So you do have to pick a player that's a little bit easier to get, a little bit cheaper to get. So I'm actually not going to choose Eden Hazard. I'm going to choose his brother, Thorgan Hazard, who really is having a great, great season in the Bundesliga for Borussia Mönchengladbach, has 9 goals, 7 assists, definitely their best player, at least in my opinion he is, but he's really one of the better attackers in the Bundesliga this year. He's 25 years old, so there's still a lot of potential there, but also it's not like he's 20, 21. He's not going to cost you an outrageous fee, so I feel like he's kind of tailor-made for Milan and the situation they're in. So I love your shout better than mine, but wouldn't be the worst thing if they got someone like Thorgan Hazard as well. All right, next question, Claudio. Is Piątek the new version of Andrea Belotti from the 2016-17 season?
Milan fans will hope he isn't. You know, Belotti is still a good striker, but that one season he was an amazing striker, and similar to Piątek right now. The reason why I think it's different, time will tell, there's no answer right now, but for me, Piątek made the jump to a bigger club. Obviously, he was very successful at Genoa from the beginning part of the season, and he joined Milan and didn't even hit a hiccup. He's just constantly scoring goals. He's playing well. He's fitting in very well. That's a big step for me. You know, usually when a striker gets to a new team, they have an adjustment period. It's not, you know, totally rare, but it's not common that a striker goes into a new club and just starts scoring goals at will. It takes a little bit of time. And the fact that Piątek has been able to do that with Milan says a lot to me. So, I'm still high on Belotti, not where he was. And kudos to Genoa, because maybe they learned from the Belotti situation. Obviously, Belotti was looking for $100 million, Torino was, for Belotti years ago when he had his great season and they didn't sell. Genoa, they bought Piątek for cheap, and they were like, hey, you know, before we get into any situation where this guy's value decreases, let's just sell him now and make our money and move on. And so kudos to them for that. But Piątek is showing signs that he could be a really strong long-term option for Milan and really carry the weight of being their striker, just because of his technique and his skill and his desire for goals. And the fact that he made that jump and still is scoring goals is the reason why I think he will have more long-term success than Belotti has so far.
Yeah, I would lean towards agreeing with you. David and I both admit that we were definitely skeptical on Piątek for a while, just because we kind of just needed to see more. But if I'm comparing him to Belotti, I do believe in him a little bit more. And yeah, maybe I'm partially being a prisoner of the moment just because of how he started, but I don't know. It's just very convincing how he started. I'm really starting to be a believer. All right, next question, staying on Milan. How will Bonaventura fit in Milan's midfield when he returns from injury? And also, how would you handle Caldara now that he's almost healthy?
So for the first part of this question with Bonaventura, he won't be back this season. So he'll have a whole preseason to go through training with the team and get back into the team. When he returns, I think he's going to be an added value. It's a great situation for him to come back. And last year, he played such a big role in Milan because he really held down that left center midfield spot and allowed Çalhanoğlu to play higher up the pitch as a winger, which kind of suited both of them. This year, when he went down and was injured, Çalhanoğlu had to revert back to that left center midfield position until Paqueta came to the club in the winter. And you could already see the results of having Çalhanoğlu up further up the field and Paqueta playing that left center midfield role. So I think Bonaventura, he's a very good player. He's technical. He's not going to wow anybody the biggest clubs in the world are not going to chase after him, but he's solid for Milan. It's going to be great because he will add depth to the team, and he's been such an integral part of the team so far that I see him working his way back into the squad. But, you know, he has had a ton of injuries in his career. This isn't the first one. So you never know. I don't think they could rely on him, and they don't have the need to anymore because of Paqueta and Çalhanoğlu and the other guys that they've brought in. But if he's healthy, he will definitely help the team out and give them more depth, which is where they need to get to. And, you know, with that, we'll go to the second part of the question about Caldara. I think you're going to see him ease into the team just the way Conte did. He isn't going to play, you know, a lot of minutes right off the bat, especially with the defense doing so well without him over the last stretch run of games. Musacchio has been playing really, really well alongside Romagnoli, who kind of solidified his place, rightfully so, as the captain and starter of every game. So Caldara, I don't think you're going to see him play too much off the bat. I think by the end of the season, he will get more time and he'll be in the squad consistently. But right now, there's just no need for that. It wouldn't be good for him or the team to shake things up. You know, you'll probably see him make appearances in lesser games. I mean, not that they have any, because they're not, you know, at this point in the season, all the games are important, but maybe against a lower level team, or even, you know, if they have a lead at the end of a game and Gattuso wants to throw an extra defender on, I could see him playing in that situation. But I would not expect him to be starting games right away, unless they have an injury crisis like they did earlier in the season at the center back position, where pretty much every center back was hurt and Abate had to play. So I would expect Caldara to be brought back into the squad very slowly, little by little. And maybe, you know, next season, 2019, 2020, is where you'll see him as a regular starter in Milan's 11.
All right, good stuff. Let's move to the player that we talked about at the top of this episode. Where would Icardi hypothetically, fit better between Juve and Napoli?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a great question. Juve, I think, would be the better fit for him because of what we spoke about earlier in the podcast as far as the dressing room. They have a very strong dressing room with, you know, Chiellini there, obviously Bonucci back now, and they have Ronaldo, of course. So they have a very strong dressing room with strong personalities. So someone like Icardi, I could see him going to Juve and being, you know, a good soldier, as I said earlier, and just training hard, playing hard, keeping quiet, trying to score his goals. I don't think Juve has the need for him. I think Napoli probably could use him more because, you know, as good as Milik's been, they could use another striker option, as Mertens hasn't been, you know, what he was a few years ago at the striker position. So I think Napoli could probably use him more. And Ancelotti is there, who has great experience managing different types of stars and all types of stars. So maybe he would do well, but I feel like at Napoli, he would be like an Higuain when he was there and just be maybe bigger than the club and bigger than the rest of the players, similar to what he's been at Inter for the past few years. Whereas at Juve, there wouldn't be so much pressure on him, and the other guys in the locker room would keep him at bay. So I would say that Juve is probably the better fit for him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, Claudio, next question. Now to Inter. This is a tough one to answer. I'm glad you're answering it and not me, because honestly, I'm struggling with answering this question for my club, Chelsea. What's more important for Inter, winning the Europa League or finishing top four?
It is a tough question. So ultimately, the two competitions, the two results, let's say, would give them Champions League football. Whether they win the Europa League or they finish in the top four, they would still play in the Champions League next year, which is ultimately their end game. They want to be back in the Champions League. They want to solidify themselves as a Champions League team. Me personally, I think that finishing in the top four is more important. As great as it would be for them to win a trophy, and the Europa League is not an easy trophy to win by any stretch of the imagination, especially this year with so many good teams like Chelsea, like Inter, like Napoli, and others, obviously, that I'm not naming right now, Arsenal. There's so many good teams in the Europa League that it's not going to be easy to win. So it would be great for them to win a trophy of that caliber. But I think that for long-term and longevity, Inter solidifying themselves as a top four team in Italy and getting back to the top of that table where they used to be historically is more important, because, you know, winning the Europa League this year will get them back into the Champions League next year. But if they finish in fifth or sixth in Italy, you know, then they've taken a step back in terms of Serie A, and that they're going to have to, you know, repeat from next year and start from fresh again. Whereas if they solidify themselves as a top three team in Italy, it's a good starting point for next year. You know, last year they finished in fourth place, obviously made Champions League. This year they've been competing for third place all season. So if they could lock up that third spot, I think it really gets them back to where they feel they belong in Serie A and ultimately challenging Juventus. So I would pick finishing top four for Inter over the Europa League.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not an easy question to answer at all, because as you said, winning a trophy is always a desired thing. The Europa League is nothing to sneeze at. It's nothing to poo-poo. But honestly, first of all, who really decides to sign with a team because they won the Europa League? And also, this would really be disappointing if Inter didn't finish in the top four based on what was expected from Inter in the summer. Everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people were predicting Inter to finish second. I know I was, because I really think they had a great summer. And if they didn't finish in the top four, I feel like that would be more disappointing than winning the Europa League would be impressive. Once again, not here to poo-poo winning the Europa League, but I just think that would be more extreme, Inter not finishing top four, than them winning the Europa League. But really, a good, good question. All right, Claudio, last Twitter question, and these really have been good. Should Romagnoli and Mancini be Italy's starting center backs?
At this point, it's too early to say that Mancini should be a starting center back for Italy. I know he's in a great run of form, but it's just he hasn't really proven himself over a long period of time, and playing at the National League level is very difficult. And then as far as Romagnoli, as great as he's been, you know, it's hard for me to, as a fan of Italy, to say that Chiellini should be replaced. And that's who Romagnoli would be replacing, because they both play on the left side of defense, of the defense. So at this point, you know, as good as Romagnoli has been, I think you have to keep Chiellini there until he doesn't want to be a part of the setup anymore and he wants to retire from national team play or takes a dip in form, which I don't see happening anytime soon. He's as hungry, you know, as ever. And when you pair Chiellini, you're obviously going to pair him with his clubmate Bonucci, because they have the understanding. I think having an understanding with your teammate from a club level and bringing that to the national team setup is so important, because the national team doesn't get as many opportunities to train together and play together. So whenever you have that combination, you really, really need to take advantage of it. And Italy will do that. You know, as long as Bonucci and Chiellini still want to be a part of the setup, they will do that. And for the future, you could look at guys like Romagnoli and Mancini, but I think as an Italy fan, you would want Romagnoli and Caldara if he ever turns out to be a top center back and play consistently for Milan. I think that would be the center back pairing of the future again, because you want to keep that connection from the club level with the national setup due to the lack of time together. So at this point, I am still sticking with the old guard of Chiellini and Bonucci to lead Italy, at least through Euro 2020.
All right, Claudio, I'm not just saying it, but you just did a tremendous, tremendous job in that Twitter question segment. I've actually learned a lot from you this week, and I know our listeners have, and I'm really not going to get too mushy here, but I really, really appreciate you co-hosting Calcioland with me this week. I know David does. I know the listeners do. So this is definitely more than justified. Just tell the listeners where they can find you on Twitter once again, but also just what you're up to, what you're doing, and then we'll end the show.
Sure. So I also had a great time filling in for David this week. I'm looking forward myself to having him back next week, because he is the center of Calcioland and great listen. But I did enjoy doing this with you, Alex, and I will continue to follow you and listen to your rants on Twitter. As far as myself, I am at CPerfetto11 on Twitter. I, of course, write alongside David at the Marzio, and I am also a writer for cloudsports.tk and sempremilan.com. But the easiest thing to do is follow me on Twitter, where you could see everything that I write and post on there, and that's the easiest place to get to my articles. So thanks again for having me, and I look forward to being a continued listener of the Calcioland podcast going forward.
Yes, absolutely. And guest. This is not the end of you on Calcioland, that is for sure. And just a big thank you from me to the listeners for giving us such great reviews from Monday's episode, not just our part with me and Claudio, but the interview I did with Stephen Ganavis of Scouted Football. Our listeners on Calcioland are just always so damn gracious in terms of telling us what they liked, what they didn't like, giving us feedback. It really helps us produce a great show. And it just feels like now in 2019, everyone is so busy that no one can be bothered to maybe say something nice or leave a review, leave a comment, whatever. But for some reason, our Calcioland listeners do have the time and can be bothered. So it really means a great, great deal to David and I. And it just helps us produce the best show we possibly can. So a real genuine thank you from me to Claudio, to David, for obviously trusting me to host this week. And once again, to the listeners for just giving us such great support, because we really couldn't do it without you. So I know I'm getting really mushy. I'll stop. David will be back next week. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your Calcio.